Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 5th, 2015. MSF says thousands are fleeing Abyei and conflict zones near the border with Sudan, but the UN says it sees no increase in fighting.
Some of them, they were saying that they were fleeing from the conflict happening in Abyei Nom. They didn't feel secure in Unity State. Some of them were staying more in the area of Abyei. So also due to fears of possible clashes.
And a top government official says the African Union's Commission of Inquiry report on South Sudan should not be released.
There is no way you would hold somebody to account at present at a time when we have not yet reached peace. That is actually a complicating factor.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The international medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says it is overwhelmed by thousands of people fleeing violence from the disputed border region of Abyei and other conflict zones near South Sudan's border with Sudan. MSF says the displaced are in desperate need of food, water, and medical care. But a UN spokesman in Abyei disputes the claim. VOA fellow Michael Atit has more from Washington.
Juan Prieto, who heads the MSF mission in South Sudan, describes the situation as dire. He says the majority of people who arrived in northern Baragazali State's Awil North County since last October are lacking many basic services, including latrines.
What it raised the alarm for us, it was the increase of acute watery diarrhea. So when people are defecating in open places, I mean, the risk of this kind of diseases is much higher. So unless something is done, especially in regards to Watson and latrines, we foresee that the living conditions of these people will be really difficult. Right now, they are very difficult.
Prieto says his organization has treated a score of people suffering from severe malaria and other infections, which they contact mainly from sleeping in open places. Despite what he calls desperate conditions, Prieto says MSF has managed to immunize hundreds of children under the age of 5 against polio and measles in northern Baragazal camps. He says he recently toured the border areas and found one common theme among the displaced.
Some of them, they were saying that they were fleeing from the conflict happening in Abyei Nom. They didn't feel secure in Unity State. Some of them were staying more in the area of Abyei. So also due to fears of possible clashes, they went back to the areas of origin, and some of them also from eastern Darfur, also fear for forced recruitment.
Daniel Adekara, a spokesperson for the United Nations Interim Security Forces in Abyei, or UNISFA, denies the allegation.
To the best of my knowledge, that is not true. Even this morning, we had a meeting with the humanitarian community here, and there's no such thing. We don't, at the moment, have any conflict between the two communities. That's not correct. I've not seen the report, but absolutely, it's not correct. It's nothing like that.
Adekara says the security in the area is normal, and UNISFA has not received any report of conflict from their field operation commanders.
The situation idea is calm and very, very normal. I'm speaking from idea. There is no incidence of any conflict. It comes to me as a big surprise that there would be such a report when there's nothing on the ground to validate that. There's no conflict going on in Abyei at the moment.
Prieto says the camps in the region are accommodating more than 15,000 households. He says most have nothing to eat.
If you go to these different sites, the most common noise is the cracking of the nuts. So most of the households are collecting nuts from the trees, then they boil, and this is all what they have to eat. So if we don't take further measures, I mean, especially in the coming months, the situation can really deteriorate for them.
Priyato says there is another concern. He says the ITPs are increasing pressure on the already limited available services in the host communities. He says that can lead to conflict between residents and IDPs.
So far in this crisis, only ACF and the Swiss Cooperation are working hand by hand with MSF. The rest of the agencies, we haven't seen or we haven't heard very much from them.
Priyato says unless other NGOs join their effort, suffering from this place will increase, especially when the rainy season starts in March. UNISFA dispute MSF characterization of the situation as a crisis. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
Ngume Debsra Karinj prepared this report in Juba. A senior United Nations official who has been touring South Sudan this week says although the intensity of fighting in the country has dropped since the height of the fighting, human rights violations continue to take place. Speaking to reporters at a press conference in Juba today, United Nations Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Evan Smanovich, says there is no doubt abuses are continuing.
Violations continue to take place, although intensity of fighting has decreased. I have met victims of recent violations, victims of rape, victims who are survivors of killings. So violations are ongoing. And of course, peace would be essential to prevent certain violations. Although some violations of human rights are ongoing and are not conflict-related, at least that conflict non-related, it is simply appalling to hear that in certain area of country, I think it was in August, a month of rape has been proclaimed. This is absolutely intolerable.
Smanovich says it is unacceptable that more than a year after fighting broke out, thousands of people still live in a UN camps because they feel it is unsafe to return to their villages.
I spent most time on our protection of civilian sites, talking to displaced persons and especially victims of various forms of violations. What was striking is that Bentiu and Malakal are destroyed cities, and they during the day there is some life, but during the night they become ghost cities because people, almost all civilians, return to our protection of civilian sites. There are over 50,000 now in Bentiu and over 20,000 in Malakal.
He says the internally displaced people he spoke to told him they have suffered long enough.
If there is anything that was common message coming from everyone, be that women or men, young or old, Nuer or Dinka, it was that people want peace. And this is fully in line what Secretary General of the United Nations, Ban Ki-moon, told in Addis. And it is that leaders should listen to their people.
Smanovich says he also met face-to-face with both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. He says the two leaders expressed commitment to end the conflict and punish their fighters accused of human rights violations.
I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Machar in Addis and yesterday President Kiir here in Juba. And I was encouraged about their messages that they will be pushing for peace and justice. And I hope that will materialize soon. We shall meanwhile continue monitoring of human rights and public reporting on them.
That was United Nations Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Ivan Smenevich, speaking to reporters in Juba today after visiting areas hard hit by the conflict in the country. South Sudan's information minister and government spokesman says the Kiir administration opposes releasing the report of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan. Michael Makui says the report on the atrocities committed in the country during the violence which broke out in Juba, Bor, Malakal and Bentiu will block progress made at the IGAD-mediated peace talks in Addis Ababa. He says rights groups who are calling for the release of the report have, quote, hidden agenda. Makui says the AU Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan, headed by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, contains names of rebel commanders, and he argues that if the document is made public, it could prolong the fighting.
This document, even if it is released, what interest will it bring peace to South Sudan? The government believes that the best way is to keep the report, pursue peace. After reaching peace, then you come to issues of accountability. There is no way you would hold somebody to account at present at a time when we have not yet reached peace. That is actually a complicating factor. The so-called human rights organizations and watch and so forth are not serious. They are not genuine. They don't want peace for South Sudan. It is a complicating factor because, say, if Michael is tried today as indicted today, will he accept peace?
No.
There are already generals who are indicted. Are we after peace or are we after indicting and holding people accountable at a time when we have not yet reached peace?
Yeah, and who are these generals who are, you are saying, let me just use your word, you are saying that some generals are indicted. Who are these generals?
The general like the man of the rebels, General Gadet is one of the generals who may be held accountable for whatever atrocity. Now, are we after peace or are we to make him accountable for what he has done?
There are other people who are arguing that there is no peace without justice. If you don't do justice to people who have been hurt in one way or another, peace will not prevail.
That is the wrong approach because you first bring peace and thereafter make people accountable for justice, not the other way around. You cannot put the cart before the horse. These are people who are not interested in peace for South Sudan. They are interested in their own agendas.
Let me take you back where you were saying that you cannot talk about issues of accountability before achieving peace. But at this moment, you signed a document in Arusha, and the document was for the reunification of the SPLM, and it also talked about the issues of reconciliation, that the accountability has to be
achieved. Yes, it talks about it, but it talks of reunification first before you account. It talks of reunification first. That is bringing the party into harmony.
There's a part of the document which says people who have been tried in a competent court or found guilty of committing crimes against humanity or human rights abuses will not hold office. Now, if you form a government of national unity today, sign a peace agreement, and you have people who have committed atrocities in that government, what are you going to do with them?
It is said those who have been convicted, anybody who is found to have committed an offense, human rights violation, and convicted, not charged, that person can be relieved of his or her position.
You are saying that the government's stand is that the report should be delayed until there is a peace agreement. Now, it looks like the two parties are not close to agreeing on anything.
We are close to agreeing. It is maybe you who have your own opinion about it. But to us as a government, there is a tremendous progress which has been made. And we are optimistic that peace will be achieved soon.
That's Michael Makui, South Sudan's information minister and government spokesman. He was speaking to me earlier today from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, rebels say Ugandan army must leave South Sudan in order for peace to prevail. Stay tuned.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you have a favorite proverb? What is it?
I have one proverb, and it is in Kiswahili, but I also translate it into English. It says that maneno za watu ni sumu. That means, you know, people's words are poison. So you should not listen to people. You should listen to what your heart tells you.
My favorite proverb is don't put your eggs in one basket. Yes, you have to choose different things in while doing things.
A country divided by itself will not stand. That's my favorite proverb. I believe in Abraham Lincoln.
I think I have a favorite proverb. Like, charity begins at home. It's my favorite because every time I want to do something, I always think, do I normally do it at home?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The SPLM in opposition says the decision to extend the Ugandan army's stay in South Sudan is unacceptable and a big blow to finding a peaceful resolution to the 13-month-long conflict. They say the continued presence of Ugandan army in South Sudan affects the goodwill in the talks. On Tuesday, defense ministers from Uganda and South Sudan signed an agreement that will keep the Ugandan army in South Sudan for another 4 months. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has that report.
The renewal agreement came just 2 days after the two warring parties in South Sudan signed a deal to cease hostilities and eventually lead to a comprehensive peace agreement. But SPLM in opposition has been calling for the withdrawal of the foreign troops since talks between the two warring parties began in January 2014. However, their calls fell on deaf ears. Ezekiel Lolgatworth is the deputy chairman of the opposition's external relations committee. He says South Sudan is a sovereign state and having foreign troops in its territory is unacceptable. He insists peace can only come with the withdrawal of UPDF forces.
For us to have a comprehensive peace and an agreement that will be implemented, the first thing that needs to happen before anything else is the UPDF to leave, because there can be obstacles to peace in South Sudan. And there are obstacles to peace in South Sudan, because that is why Salva is adamant, he's intransigent not to think peace, because basically he believes that, of course, he knows that Museveni is protecting him.
Yesterday, Foreign Affairs spokesman Mawien Makola-Rick said the government still needs the UPDF to protect key government installations and they will leave once the implementation of the cessation of hostilities agreement and permanent ceasefire is guaranteed. Lol says Uganda has long-term interests in an unstable South Sudan and therefore they will continue to stay in the country.
The crisis of South Sudan has created an opportunity for Museveni, President Museveni, to milk the economy of South Sudan, because basically UPDF now is being paid by South Sudan. The money of the oil and the money of South Sudanese is actually being taken to Uganda. So basically, what would be the incentive for them to leave if they are running Salva left and right and they are telling Salva what to do and Salva will do it, because he's actually, he has no army to protect him except the UPDF.
Lol reiterated that they are committed to peace and are negotiating in good faith. He acknowledged that they had taken the country back to war but assured the people of South Sudan that the differences and any conflicts will be amicably resolved.
I'm sorry for what had happened in the country. It is not expected. The leaders of South Sudan have failed them. But hopefully we are actually realizing our mistakes and we are committed to peace and we will make it up to them, because what had happened in the country should have not happened. And we are going to make sure that we reunite the SPLM. We have a transitional government in place soon, regardless of who is going to be the head of that transitional government.
Lul urges the international community and regional actors to put more pressure on the government and Uganda to redeploy the UPDF. This marks the third time South Sudan has asked for an extension of the presence of Ugandan military, which deployed in December 2013 to support the government of Salva Kiir. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
And now for some international news. During U.S. President Barack Obama's recent visit to India, he and India's leaders committed to work more closely to promote stability and peace in the Asian Pacific and Indian Ocean regions. But even as the New Delhi makes a significant shift in aligning itself with Washington to contain China's growing influence, it is also working to smoothen ties with its Asian neighbor. Anjana Patricia has the story from New Delhi.
As Indian Foreign Minister Sushma Swaraj visited Beijing this week, Indian and Chinese leaders struck an optimistic note about growing the relationship between the two nations. Chinese officials backed India's bid for a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, as well as an Indian proposal for a resolution in the world body to punish countries that shelter and finance terrorism. During President Barack Obama's recent visit to New Delhi, he and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi declared an era of new trust. In a joint strategic vision, they pledged to work together to protect freedom of navigation, maintain maritime security, and keep airspace safe in the Asia-Pacific and Indian Ocean region. It was a significant departure for India, which has stayed away from explicitly aligning its security concerns with Washington. Lalit Mansingh, the former Indian Foreign Secretary and Ambassador to the United States, says India has virtually abandoned its policy of non-alignment.
China is not directly mentioned, but there is a perception amongst the diplomats and the strategic planners that in the long term, China poses a threat. And therefore, we see a greater convergence of Mr. Modi's ACT East policy and President Obama's rebalance in Asia. So from all these points of view, I think the U.S. is emerging as not just a strategic partner, but the principal strategic partner of India.
Although the economic relationship between India and China is thriving, deep suspicions linger. India also worries about Beijing's expanding influence in the Indian Ocean region. The docking of two Chinese submarines in Sri Lanka last year raised hackles in New Delhi. Sukhdeo Muni with the Indian Defence and Strategic Institute in New Delhi says Indian policymakers hope that the new partnership with the United States will make it easier to deal with China.
There is a feeling that China behaves properly when they know that they are under pressure. It would pressure China to be far more accommodative and far more soft so far as India is concerned.
Since taking office last year, Prime Minister Modi has made no secret of his ambitions to play a greater role in Asia. He has moved decisively to forge closer ties with countries like Japan and Vietnam, which are involved in disputes with Beijing in the South China Sea. India wants to get weapons and advanced military technologies from the United States to modernize its armed forces to develop better capability to counter China. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Fighters from the Nigerian militant group Boko Haram killed dozens of people today in northern Cameroon, an official said, as cross-border clashes continue between the insurgents and multiple governments trying to defeat them. A government spokesman in Cameroon says at least 800 fighters burned churches, mosques, and villages as they slaughtered people who resisted joining them in fighting against Cameroonian forces. The Yemen branch of al-Qaeda says one of its top commanders was killed in a U.S. airstrike in the country's south. The gentleman, which is Nad Hari, and three other militants were killed while traveling in a car last week in the southern province of Shabwa and al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. And finally, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States is seeking a diplomatic solution to the conflict in eastern Ukraine, but adds we cannot close our eyes to Russian tanks and fighters crossing the border. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
A new report says too often a child's survival depends on a place of birth, parents' income, and ethnicity. Save the Children calls it unfair lottery of birth that violates every child's right to an equal start in life. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Save the Children CEO Carolyn Mild says in many countries, a child's survival is a matter of chance.
We looked at the implications of child survival across 87 countries, actually, in this report. And what we found was the most deprived kids, those in sometimes rural areas or at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, those were the children that were dying at the highest rates.
The report, The Lottery of Birth, says in 78% of the countries studied, at least one social or economic group is being left behind. In 16% of the countries, the report finds inequalities in children's survival chances increased across all the groups for which data was collected. But the report says there are countries already trying to close the equality gap.
When they did that, when they actually made parity between, for example, the poorest and the wealthiest kids, they actually dropped mortality rate faster. We need to worry about the most deprived kids. And actually, when we do that, our progress on something like child survival can actually be faster. So that's the real nut of this report.
Much progress has been made over the years in reducing child mortality rates. Save the Children says currently 17,000 fewer children die every day compared to 1990. And the under-5 child mortality rate has been cut nearly in half. But Mild says many children still don't have an equal chance to survive. The worst child inequality is found in sub-Saharan Africa. She says focusing on the most deprived kids levels the playing field.
Rwanda is a really good example, Malawi, another good example, where governments have really focused on the poorest, the hardest to reach kids. They've made great progress on dropping child mortality, so saving more kids' lives, and they've closed that equity gap.
Mild says giving all children an equal chance to survive should be part of the Sustainable Development Goals. The SDGs will replace the Millennium Development Goals that expire at the end of this year. She says the goals should focus on programs known to boost a child's chances of survival.
Common diseases are still killing many kids in the developing world. So vaccination campaigns that actually reach some of these hard-to-reach areas, they might be in the rural areas, they might be in deep urban slums, but making sure that when we do vaccination campaigns, we're looking at reaching every child. So that's one example. Undernutrition is a big factor in child mortality. And so making sure that those nutrition programs, again, are getting to all children.
The Save the Children report encourages governments to spend their own money on child survival programs and not simply rely on donors.
We have seen real progress in places like Ethiopia, for example, where the government has made a huge commitment to child survival. And they have funded tens of thousands of community health workers to be in villages and towns where the health system doesn't get to. And it's resulted in much, much better child survival rates in Ethiopia, for example.
The report recommends universal health coverage to ensure that poor and marginalized groups have access to quality services. Save the Children says its ultimate vision is a world in which no child dies from preventable diseases, no matter where they are born or who their parents are. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that report by Joe DiCapua brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Zawaj Ghali by Sultan Clinton.
Susanna Anayade, Sultan Vision 3 Champion. Madame Taisim Susanna, Nina Gini Sawa. Hey, Mudar Basena, Samoneta Zawaja, Madame Taitana. Uroa Pibeto, Montali Abutonati. Oh, Dumia, Anabila Mulusu. Oh, Madame Taifu.
Rushkan Mafa. Zawaja mafi fitini.
Hey, anagini dugu telefon tabeto mon. Anagumuru wa fibeta butongo. Kalita deru shono, anakeli mugali. Anaderu Susanna tai. Aina na pegarena. Anakeli mugurus mafi. Zawaja diga gali, anabamulu shunu. Mama, urusha makifaya. Maradero ana, abuto kali kalama fi. Anabamulu shunu.
Kana saninja kawajaja bojira mbana de beser tamam lakini karine ajaria aju zuru 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 gara.
We have been listening to Sultan Clinton with the song Zawaj Ghali. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
sano. Oh, 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 ya papa. Abu Dhabi, Warai, Solo, Tane, Kanduru, Smurfs, Sudan.